So if you remember last thing we did was to calculate or to, sorry, to propose an entailment measure. Entailment measures would have three axioms, if you remember. All right. Entanglement measures max only if max entangled, right? Zero only if separable, and can't increase under LOCC, right? Those are the three axioms that we had for entailment measures, right? Right, you remember? Okay. We saw the entanglement of formation, which was a great entanglement measure in with respect to satisfying the three axioms. Also, from the point of view of nice physical interpretation, if you want, is ideal because it generalizes the entanglement entropy for mixed states, and that's fantastic. It actually becomes the entanglement entropy for pure states. And the sad part about it was that, well, it's horrible to compute. You can't really compute it in most cases. So we have to introduce other entanglement measures or other attempts to entanglement measures in order to compensate for the fact that this the entanglement of formation is sadly uncomputable most of the time. So the next thing we're going to introduce is the concurrence. Now the concurrence, and this is a definition, is defined in a way that would remind you a lot of the entanglement of formation. Okay? As you can tell, I wrote the wrong thing here. No, it's fine. It is fine, but anyway, the idea is, again, finding given a state rho AB, it's, again, finding a decomposition of the form rho AB equals PJ psi j AB psi j. Okay, and the idea is that, well, actually compute the infimum of the expectation value of this quantity that I also call C because happens to be the definition for pure states. Compute the minimum or the infimum of this quantity, so optimizing over all the possible decompositions into bipartite pure states that you can have for rho. And these quantities, you can see, are basically you're substituting the entropy. You substituted here the entanglement entropy by this quantity here. And this quantity here is, in a way, another kind of entropy. If you remember, this thing is the purity of the partial state. So basically it's telling me, OK, get the purity of the partial state and compute something like the mixedness of it. So 1 minus the purity, right, which is the mixedness. Make sense? So this thing is really telling me, well, the average mixedness that you have in the partial state after tracing out one of the subsystems, after finding all the possible decompositions in bipartite pure states, compute the average over them, so the average over the purity of the partial state, but in the decomposition that makes it the minimum possible. Same philosophy exactly at the entanglement of formation. I can always find a decomposition in a basis that are, for example, think of a qubit, right? For a system of 2 qubits, same as for the entanglement of formation, for a system of 2 qubits, you can always find the compositions, right, in terms of bipartite states that are entangled. But that doesn't make it entangled, because I only need to find one of them that is separable to show that there's no entanglement. Make sense? So the idea is, well, just take the one that has the least amount of entanglement. Here is the take one that has the least, if you want, mixedness, as opposed to entanglement entropy. Make sense, everybody? Is that understood? It's the same as entanglement of formation, but replace entanglement entropy by this measure of mixedness that we have here. 1 minus the purity. Then you multiply by 2 and take the square root.
Makes sense. Okay. Now, of course, what do you think? Is this gonna be easier? I mean, one thing I can tell you that may not be evident, but one thing I can, well, maybe it is evident. Do you think this is a measure of entanglement or not? Meaning, does, do you think it satisfies the axioms? What do you think? I would love to hear opinions.
Well, it satisfies the second one, right? Because
it satisfies the second one. What about the first one? You have any opinions, even if you don't know? No opinions. All right, the entanglement of formation satisfied everything. This is no different from the entanglement of formation, really. Because I'm using a different entropy. You see that the mixedness is an entropy. Agreed? I mean, it's not an informational entropy, but it's an entropy in the sense that it's zero for pure states and it's maximum for maximally mixed states and it's monotonic under increases of, as you have in the notes, it's monotonic as you increase the amount of mixed states that you have. So the purity, so 1 minus the purity behaves as an entropy. Agreed, everybody? It's quantifying your ignorance as well. This is very important, and I'm not entirely sure where we stand, because I can tell. This quantity, the purity, just that, the purity. You remember that, right, from the classes. That thing is zero if the state is pure. That thing is maximal if the state is mixed. And it's monotonic when you go from a pure state to a maximally mixed state with a one-parametric family. Agreed? Right. 1 minus that, let's call it the purity, right, has the opposite behavior. The purity is maximum for maximally entangled states, for pure states, and 0 for maximally mixed states. Agreed? And it's monotonic when I move from pure states to mixed states, exactly as the von Neumann entropy. Agreed, everybody? That makes sense? I don't know, you're not very interactive. I can't even read your faces. Are you in despair? Are you bored? Are you panicking? Are you happy? Who knows? That, in that sense, right, you're doing something similar to that. You're kind of doing the opposite. You're maximizing the entropy for me. Yeah.
So can you again once explain why the using the entanglement of formation is incomputable?
Yeah, because it's an NP-hard problem computing it. It's an optimization. The problem is the optimization.
Optimization, right. Yeah. So there's many ways that I can decompose my...
Infinitely many.
Infinitely many ways.
Yeah. Okay. And you need a continuum space of parameters.
I see.
And no one. You also need to... It's not just this. You need to optimize on the states, the possible state decomposition, bipartite state decomposition.
And optimizing the purity is...
The same.
Is NP-hard as well?
It's NP-hard as well. I mean, you revealed, that was a reveal that I wanted to do. I wanted first to agree with you. No, no, it's perfect. No, it's perfect. This is the reveal part, right? Because I wanted to convince you that this is an entanglement measure as well. Because what we are minimizing here is the average of the purity. And the purity behaves exactly as an entropy in terms of informational content of information that it has, right? Then we would have arrived to the conclusion that probably this is an entanglement measure, and I would have confirmed, yes, it is an entanglement measure. But if it's an entanglement measure, it's not going to be easy. You see, this has to be true. If you have something that is a true entanglement measure, computing it cannot be easy, because we know, and we already discussed, that deciding, not quantifying, deciding if a state is entangled or not is an NP-hard problem. Just deciding if it's entangled or not. And if you have an easy thing to compute, that if it's zero, it's not entangled, and if it's non-zero, it's entangled, you're deciding as well. Doing actually as something more complex than deciding, or at least as complex as deciding. And indeed, if you have a full entanglement measure, it's going to be difficult to compute. Make sense? Now, for intuition purposes, every time that I tell you to optimize over possible decompositions of a density operator, it's going to be tough. Make sense? Not saying that we don't have good techniques for many cases, but by saying that it's NP-hard means that with the techniques we have, it's going to scale horribly. Make sense, everybody? All right. Good, good. Okay, so I kind of said almost everything I wanted to say about concurrence, not really, but about concurrence in this formulation. Hopefully the messages came across. Concurrence is similar to entanglement of formation, only I'm averaging over the purity of the state. Over the mixedness of the state, right? Which is one minus the purity, if you want. Which plays a role similar to entropy. And also compute, it's a true entanglement measure, and computing it is tough. Then the next question that may come to mind is like, well, why bother then? Because the entanglement entropy was, you know, the advantage that it had is very physical. It's the generalization of the entanglement entropy, right? Entanglement of formation. Why introduce this thing? That's a really good question. Why? Well, maybe I'll write it here. Concurrence has a closed kind of, has an easy to compute version for systems that are 2x2, for 2 qubits. And it's a popular entanglement measure for 2 qubits. It's a popular, really popular entanglement measure. This is the maximum of zero or this quantity. Lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, and lambda 4 are a sequence of ordered eigenvalues of an operator R. And that operator R is defined. There's some, if you want, notion of, it's a little bit funny, this definition, because it looks it's going to be simple, but it's always square root of the square root of rho AB, sigma Y. Well, let me first call it rho. I'll just write it like this. Rho tilde, rho AB, where rho tilde is defined as sigma y tensor sigma y rho AB star hat sigma y. This is for A, this is for B, this is for A, tensor sigma YB, and then rho star hat is the complex conjugate of the matrix representation of rho AB in the computational basis. The computational basis is the eigenbasis of sigma set. Finally. So that's the concurrence for 2x2. You can prove that with that definition on the left, you can have that the concurrence can be expressed for a system of 2 qubits as that. Make sense? Yeah.
So do we have negative eigenvalues? Because otherwise this would always be zero, right?
Oh, is the sequence is the other way. That's a typo in the notes. Thank you. Well spotted. typo in the notes if we can note it down. Sorry about that. Make sense, everybody? Okay, so this thing, which is a little bit contrived, arguably, this thing is very easy to compute, right? Agreed, everybody, without having to optimize over anything. Because all that I need to do is linear algebra, is operations that are polynomially tough, if you want. Make sense? So this is, I think, what gives the concurrence is popularity. I am personally not that much of a fan of concurrence, but it's certainly true. That is a measure in time and measure that can be computed very easily for 2 by 2 qubits. Make sense? Now, of course, the concurrence can be related to the entanglement of formation, which is nice as well. I mean, probably not surprisingly, I'm telling you that, well, this is in a way kind of an entropy. So perhaps it's not that surprising that an entanglement measure that is defined so similarly to the entanglement of formation can be related to the entanglement of formation. And indeed, the entanglement of formation of a bipartite system, it's equal to h 1 plus root of 1 plus concurrence rho ab. Divided by 2, where the function h, you probably recognize, minus x log 2 x minus 1 minus x log 2, or the log that you use for the entropy, 1 minus x. Okay. So do you recognize this function h? What is it?
Entropy, right?
It's a Shannon entropy, no? You can interpret this as the Shannon entropy of two states or two values, random variable, and the probabilities are this and 1 minus that. Make sense? So this is nice. The entanglement of formation can be written in terms of the concurrence. Again, basically telling you that the concurrence is a twist on the entanglement of formation, right? Using a different quantifier for it, for the average, a different notion of entropy. Does that make sense, everybody? Yeah.
It isn't too obvious to see how this definition of concurrence is what comes down to. The definition for 2 cross 2?
No, not at all. Yeah. In fact, 2 research papers that are long. Yeah. Sorry, I'm not giving you the steps for these things, but these things, semi-definite programming and proving theorems with these things is tough. It's not something you do in a lecture, typically, unless the course is about it. So sorry to ask you that, to have faith. This is the definition, and this is the one you should look at for understanding it, okay? It so happens that it can be expressed very simply in a low dimensional. This is only true for 2 by 2 systems, huh? For 2 qubits. Make sense?
Good, good.
So far, we have seen 2 measures of entanglement. There are true measures of entanglement. They satisfy the axioms. Entanglement of formation and concurrence. Any questions? Now, with what you've learned so far, if I give you a random state and I tell you how entangled it is, you still may not be able to compute it unless it's a 2 by 2 system. With this, yeah, you can program this in a computer and do it no problem. Agreed? Programming an optimization like this in a computer is not as trivial. And it's not as fast. That makes sense? Good. So we are left with an issue. And the issue is, well, it's not that I have many options to actually compute for real, other than horrible optimizations, or maybe I'm working with 2 qubits, right? let's introduce another entanglement measure. Negativity.
This is typically notated as calligraphic N.
Okay.
Negativity
is
the negative sum of all the negative eigenvalues of row AB.
Partial transpose. Okay. So negativity is an interesting measure. It's like get all the negative eigenvalues of the partial transpose density matrix, add them up, change the sign, that's negativity. The absolute value of the sum of all negative eigenvalues of the partial transpose. I remind you, so this thing is partial transpose of rho AB. Now, where does that come from? It's kind of easy to see where it comes from, no? Remember Peres' criterion? Peres' criterion told us that if the partial transpose density matrix is not a positive operator, so it has at least a negative eigenvalue, then I know that the state is entangled. It's a sufficient condition. Make sense? So the proposal of negativity as an entanglement measure is say, well, maybe how negative it is, how this becomes, how less of a density operator this is when I take the partial transpose, right? Then maybe the less separable it would be. That's the logic. Make sense? A very simple definition, right? And the problem of computing is a very simple one. It's a problem of taking a partial transpose, which is simple, and diagonalizing, right? Finding eigenvalues, which is polynomial. Make sense? So, in terms of axioms, right? Any intuition if all these axioms are satisfied? What do you think? From what you know from Peres' criterion, right? How many people? Oh, go ahead.
Fails the second one, it's not going to satisfy the second.
That is exactly right. In fact, it does satisfy the first one, it satisfies the third one. But if that's as you see it, it's also intuitively easy to see that it satisfies the third one because of the definition. If you do partial transpose, right? Local operations are not going to change the positivity of the partial transpose. But it is true that it can be zero for non-separable states. We already discussed the states that have bound entanglement, what we call bound entanglement, non-distillable entanglement, right? Those states would give you zero negativity, but they're not separable. Agreed? So yeah, sadly, it's not an entanglement measure. Make sense? Because of not satisfying the second. However, remember what happened in 2x2 and 2x3 with Peres' criterion? In 2x2, yeah, go ahead.
Implied both ways.
Right, for 2x2, for 2x2 and 3x2, it is a faithful, and now I'm introducing a new word, entanglement measure. Now you see, I'm gonna call faithful entanglement measures that are really entanglement measures, the ones that satisfy all the axioms. And I'm gonna use entanglement measure without faithful, saying that non-faithful, if you want entanglement measure, those that don't satisfy all of them, but at least has some of the properties of what we want from an entanglement measure, okay? So for 2x2 and 3x2, it is faithful. So it's easy to compute, and faithful is a true entanglement measure. But it's a bit better than that. For higher dimension, it is a measure of distillable entanglement. Right, remember, precisely the cases where Peres criterion fails are the cases where the states have bound entanglement, non-distillable entanglement, entanglement that cannot be transformed into Bell pairs through LOCC and many copies of the system. So it's very useful for protocols in quantum information, because the negativity is telling you exactly the amount of entanglement that you can actually distill into Bell states, IBITs, that you can actually use for your protocols in quantum info as a resource. Make sense? Everybody? Everybody happy with that? So negativity is not an entanglement measure because it's not a faithful, that's why we use entanglement measure, because it doesn't satisfy the second axiom. However, that's, you can say, this is not a bug, it's a feature, because it tells me when I have distillable entanglement. Negativity is one of my favorite entanglement measures, by the way. So I'm gonna be nice to negativity. Make sense, everybody? Something interesting. Negativity and concurrence are not unrelated. Concurrence is always larger than negativity. In fact, it's always larger than twice the negativity. And also bound it like this. 1 minus c squared plus c squared minus 1 minus c. Which is kind of neat. This also tells you that if you were to plot, if you have a one parametric family of states that go from maximally entangled to separable, typically those curves look like that. If concurrence were one for a curve that concurrence is like that, negativity would be something like that. Not true that it would be a straight line, but whatever, it goes something like that. Make sense, everybody? So that's neat to know. And in fact, for 2x2 systems, concurrence is exactly twice the negativity, saturates. Make sense, everybody? There's something else. I'm not going to get much into that, but it's good to mention. For Gaussian states, of continuous variable systems, negativity is faithful as well. What are those things? Okay, Gaussian states. So first of all, continuous variables, right? Continuous variables, I mean things like infinite dimensional, if you want quantum systems, okay? Think of two particles, right? With a position and a momentum. So if it's two particles, dimension four phase space. Agreed? Most of quantum information that you see, at least at the introductory level, it's based on finite dimensional systems. And most of it is actually reduced to qubits, to two-dimensional systems. But in general, of course, that's not the end of it. You can do way more things. You have infinite dimensional. It's not one-to-one. You you know, when people say, well, okay, you can always decompose things and talk about qubits. Well, not true for continuous variables. You have way more things that you can do when you work in continuous variables and you do quantum information of continuous variables, right? So that's what I mean by continuous variables. Gaussian states are states that can be, so when you have continuous variable quantum systems, you can represent the state one-to-one as distributions over phase space. It's working in a Hilbert space or working in phase space. And those distributions in phase space, one of the most famous one-to-one distribution in phase space, most popular, is called the Wigner function. Those of you who have any contact with quantum optics may have heard of it, but it's just a distribution over phase space that characterizes the quantum state. Fun fact, can I think of the Wigner function or as a probability distribution? Well, the answer is no, because if you were able to map quantum states to probability distributions over phase space, there would be nothing quantum about it, about the theory. Because that's statistical classical mechanics, right? Distributions over phase space characterizing states. So the Wigner function in general would not be a probability distribution. In particular, this one is can be negative, the Wigner function. And we actually use the negativity of the Wigner function, not related to this negativity, to characterize how quantum a state is, if you want. Well, Gaussian states are those quantum states whose Wigner function is Gaussian. Therefore classical, huh, in a way. But even though the Wigner function is positive and for Gaussian states, they can still have entanglement. And then you may wonder, can a classical state have entanglement? And I would tell you, yeah. You can have a classical state and a classical theory with entanglement. Entanglement is not a tell that as the state is quantum. What is a tell that a state is quantum is being able to violate the inequalities with it, not to be local realistic. Okay, so having entanglement is not enough. It's sufficient, but not necessary. Sorry, the opposite. It's necessary, but not sufficient to violate the inequalities. Okay, so Gaussian states can have entanglement. In order to violate the inequalities with that entanglement, you need to use some operation that's non-Gaussian. For Bell inequalities, that comes at the level of the measurement. When you measure, you're making operations that are not Gaussian. That's how you can use that entanglement. And you may think, but maybe those Gaussian states are very uncommon and rare, and I don't use them. No, you use them all the time. Example, coherent states. Coherent states in QFT are Gaussian states. Squeeze states are Gaussian states. Two-mode squeeze states that have entanglement, you may know them if you've taken other courses. You know, people in holography love them. They just don't call them that. They call them the thermal field dual. There's a two-mode squeeze state in the language of quantum optics. And this is a cool thing because it's an entangled state that when you trace the other subsystem, what you're left with is a thermal state. And that's very cool because that means that this is as entangled as you can be at a constant energy. Remember, thermal state maximizes von Neumann entropy, right? So if I have two harmonic oscillators and I create a two-mode squeeze state, and I trace out one of the harmonic oscillators, what do I get? A thermal state. Oh, thermal state maximizes the von Neumann entropy, which is the entanglement entropy of the whole thing, because the two-mode squeeze is pure. So two-mode squeeze states, or thermal field duals, if you want to call them that, the name comes because the quantum opticians first had this name, and then about 15 years later, people in string theory and in holography rediscovered those states and were very, what name do we give it? They didn't know quantum optics, so they couldn't give it the same name, so they gave it another name. And it's called thermal field dual because they were describing a field, right? A state of a quantum field. And the partial states are thermal. That's why they called it that. So, this is a Gaussian state, so classical, that has, for two harmonic oscillators, that would be a state that has the most entanglement it can have at constant energy. Still is classical in the sense that can be understood as a probability distribution over phase space. Make sense? I know typically people think that entanglement is a truly quantum feature. It's not. Violating Bell inequalities with it is a truly quantum feature, all right. Does that make sense to everybody? We can talk more about it if you want after class, because the course is not about this, but I think it's a good thing to keep in mind. So, quantifying it, by the way, the first violations of Bell inequalities that we ever had, the aspect experiment, Alana Specht, right, that did the first experiment in 1984, where we acknowledged violations of Bell inequalities experimentally, was done with a Gaussian state, only they approximated it. When you create what they call pairs of entangled photons using parametric down conversion, using a nonlinear crystal in quantum optics, that is a medium in which light can interact with itself through the medium, right? Effectively gives a self-interaction for light. And then you get a high energy photon, quote unquote photon, and then you produce a pair, and it's an entangled pair. That is just an approximation for a two-mode squeeze state, when the squeezing is tiny. Makes sense. So these things are very useful in quantum information. So we can use negativity to quantify their entanglement faithfully, satisfying the three axioms as well. Yep.
Oh, so are there statements in quantum information that is measure dependent?
Say again?
Are there statements that are measure dependent?
No.
No?
We try not to make them measure dependent. I mean, are there? Can you make statements?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. If there is not, then this.
Well, that's not typically used. Yeah, you can make statements that are measure dependent. Yes.
Okay, because this seems to me like it's this, and probably you can come up with a gazillion more measures, and it's more like a mass problem that you can put like different metric functions
yep.
on spaces and.
Yep.
So like, but generally we don't really prefer all the like metric distances, metric functions and stuff like this, right? There is some physical intuitions that like guides us
yep.
into it. So is there a chance that like-
Totally. So here we have a problem. The problem is that the ones that have a clear physical intuition
yep.
are tough to compute. For example, if it were not difficult to compute, I would just stick to the entanglement of formation. Because entanglement of formation connects with something fundamental. It's the generalization of the entanglement entropy. It's really easy to understand physically what it is. Intuition. Problem is that it's difficult to compute. The reason why we introduce more is precisely to try to get around the problem of that being difficult to compute. They all, so at the very least, you know, the sacred one that you can never violate is this one, the third one. Okay, ideally you want the first one. If you have to give me what are your priorities, I would say first this one. If you have that's violated, that's nothing. That's telling you nothing about entanglement. If you satisfy this one, you are at least telling something about entanglement. Then this one would be my second priority. I want the maximal entangled states that are well-defined, right? I want them to saturate this measure of entanglement. And if, you know, if you are in an ideal world, you also want this one. Now, having the three of them makes it difficult. You have to choose. I was about to say that negativity is really easy to compute. Why? Because it's a diagonalization problem again, finite eigenvalues. Make sense? So yeah, the reason we have so many is not because we are like so stupendous that we want many. No, it's because just the ones that are truly physically reasonable, nice, and have everything they have, they're difficult to compute. So we need to get around by relaxing a bit what we want and still getting enough information to make it useful. Make sense? Yeah.
Negativity works unless you have bounded entanglement. Is there a measure for bounded entanglement?
Bound entanglement, not bounded.
Or a witness for bounded entanglement?
Well, I mean, you can cook up measures of that. There's no standard measure, but you can. I mean, for example, you can think of inequalities that relate the amount of negativity versus the amount of concurrence and things like that. But let's limit in this course the word bound entanglement to states that have no distillable entanglement, only bound entanglement. So, for example, in those cases, you compute the concurrence, for example, that will measure the bound entanglement of bound entanglement.
I'm really asking, can you know whether negativity is going to work, whether it's going to be faithful?
No, you cannot know a priori. It's a difficult problem to determine. You know that if you work in any of these three cases, it is
right.
faithful, but that's it. And if not, you can at least say that the system has distillable entanglement, if it's non-zero. So for example, if it's zero and you may have bound entanglement, you can still say, well, but that's not that useful, I cannot distill it, so. There is a twist on entanglement, negativity that I'm going to write down here. It's another entanglement measure that I call logarithmic. Oh, I don't call it, everybody does. Negativity. And let's call it NL. And I'm going to define it as log 2. 2n plus 1. And you may think, well, it's just the negativity, but you take the log two. It's true. Agreed. The advantage that it has is that this is additive under tensor product. And it is helpful. Let's discuss that. This is helpful. So if I have four systems, say, and each of them has an entanglement entropy of 1, 2, and 3, for example, then I can say, what is the total amount of entanglement that I have as a resource? If I'm doing a resource theory and I want to use an entanglement for something, and then you say, well, in general, that's not additive. Entropies are sub-additive. There might be correlations between the systems or something, and that makes it sub-additive. Agreed? You cannot just add all the entropies and say that's the total entanglement entropy that I have. Make sense? Well, logarithmic negativity is additive on the tensor product. So if I have five copies of five systems with some logarithmic negativity each, I can add the logarithmic negativities up, and that's, that tells me the total amount of logarithmic negativity that I have. Make sense? All right. So there are two more, not measures, I guess, of entanglement, but two more quantities that are going to be interested. But before moving there, I don't need to erase here, which is nice. Let's do a little comparison. So there's a table that I always do. Is it limited to small dimensions? Is it easy to compute? Does it work for non-pure states? Is it faithful? Does it have a nice physical interpretation? And we have entanglement entropy. This is very ununderstandable. I want to write here, is it an entanglement measure really? It's the same as asking if it's faithful, right? Let me just put it here. I want to make it a little bit more sensational for effect, okay? Is it an entanglement measure rather than is it faithful? All right, so first of all, let's take a look at the entanglement entropy. And then you tell me yes or no. Those are yes or no questions. And as you know, yes or no questions can be answered with yes or no. That's giving me one bit of information, or could be answered with less than a bit of information. That's fine too. A non-committal answer could be okay sometimes. So, entanglement entropy. Is entanglement entropy limited to small dimensions? Yes or no? No, right? You can compute it no matter what. That's nice. That's good. So let me just write here
when things are good, I'm going to be happy. How about that? Is it easy to compute? Is entanglement entropy easy to compute? Yes, just be loud. I would enjoy if the class was a bit louder. I guess you can't have anything, right? You can have really good. They're paying attention, enjoying the course, and they're loud. I prefer the three first, that's for sure. Anyway, is it easy to compute? Yes. It's very easy to compute. It's a diagonalization again. Does it work for non-pure states? No, it doesn't. Let me put an exclamation point there. Not at all. It's not even defined in that case. Is it an entanglement measure? No, not really, no. It's not faithful, no. No. We already discussed that maybe I can say, well, yes for pure states. It is for pure states, obviously. So when it works, it is. But not at all for mixed states. It violates everything. You can't use it even for orientation. Make sense? Does it have a nice physical interpretation? Yes, indeed. Very much so. It does. It's the Shannon entropy of the partial state. It's indeed how much ignorance I have. If I knew everything at the beginning, pure states, how much ignorance I have when I remove one of the subsystems. Make sense? Nice. Let's do the entanglement of formation. Okay, entanglement of formation. Is it limited to small dimension? Nah. So good. Is it easy to compute?
No.
Not at all. Thank you. That's nice. It's actually very tough to compute. Does it work for non-pure states?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Is it an entanglement measure? Is it faithful?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it have a nice physical interpretation? The answer is yes. Yes, remember, this is the generalization of the entanglement entropy, and it can be interpreted very easily as the average entanglement entropy of all the components, bipartite pure components of the states. So they're taking an average, the same with the same coefficients as the rho, you know? You have a rho, which is a probability distribution over a bipartite state, and this is the average over the entanglement entropy of each of them. Right, so it's got a nice interpretation, and indeed generalizes the entanglement entropy for mixed states. Is that a question?
Wasn't it the minimum, not the average?
It is the minimum of the average. So you have to compute the average. Remember, it's pi times the entanglement entropy of each of them, and the average is given by rho. Rho is an average over pure states, and it's like each of them has some entanglement entropy, average over them with the same average, and of all the possible decomposition, minimize that. Make sense? This is the natural generalization of the entanglement entropy. Make sense, everybody? All right. Let's talk about concurrence and negativity, because this is such a... Okay, is it limited to small dimension, concurrence? No, not really. This is good. Is it easy to compute? Well, not in general. And yes, for 2x2, right? Agreed? Does it work for non-pure states?
Yes.
Yes, it does. Is it a faithful entanglement measure?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
And finally, does it have a nice physical interpretation?
Yes.
Okay, what is it? Yes, that's good.
It's the extent of mixedness or something like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna add a yes with a question mark, and the reason is because it's through the entanglement of formation notion that it has it. So it's a less powerful version of the entanglement of formation. So true, you can relate it easily, so it's have a nice interpretation, but the question mark is more like, well, yes, but not as powerful and direct as the entanglement of formation. Okay. And then negativity. Is negativity limited to small dimension?
Kind of, right?
What? How?
Because it's only faithful.
Ah, you mean that. Mm. Well, but Gaussian states are infinite dimensional.
Oh, I see.
No, to compute it, certainly not. The thing applies and has some meaning even outside that. So I'm going to write a no, and we will discuss that. Is it easy to compute?
Yes.
It's the easiest, if you ask me. I mean, for a computer, it's equally easy as the easy ones, but... For humans, this is the easiest to compute. Does it work for non-pure states? Yes. Is it an entanglement measure? Now is when we get to what you said. It's a faithful entanglement measure. Yes, in 2x2, 2x3, Gaussian. And otherwise, measures distillable entanglement. This is important, right? Because when it's not faithful, it's not that you cannot trust it. It's that it's measuring something else about the state that is useful in its own right. And does it have a nice physical interpretation? Opinable, maybe, I don't know. Maybe, because it's really telling you about something that's called distillable entanglement. So you can interpret it as a measure of the resource that you have through entanglement, the resource that you use for quantum info for entanglement. So that's why I leave the maybe there. I mean, maybe you can say no in terms of pure like entanglement, but it definitely is telling you something about your ability of building a usable, resourceable entanglement. Any questions? Because I have a question for you. And it's a question that is relevant in many fields. Like in relativistic quantum information, when we do something called entanglement harvesting, we always have this discussion. And it's a question that I always ask when people use one thing and not the other. Question for you. Imagine that you're working with a system of 2 qubits for some reason, okay? And then you have to decide what to use. So for example, say, I'll give you a scenario to make it more concrete. Say that I have a quantum field, right? And I want to couple some simple detectors to the quantum field. And I want to extract entanglement from the field, say. There's entanglement in the field, I couple 2 subsystems, and I want to extract entanglement to the subsystems. Those subsystems could be harmonic oscillators, could be 5-level systems, in the simplest case, 2-level system qubits. That's what we call unruly with detectors, typically. So imagine that I couple qubits, right? Some people would couple harmonic oscillators. I'm going to just couple qubits. Making them qubits, then things are easy to compute, right? Those states are going to end up in a mixed state, so I cannot use the entanglement entropy. I need to decide. I'm not going to use entanglement of formation, that's tough to compute. I need to decide between concurrence and negativity. Which one would you use and why? It's 2 qubits. Or maybe there's no advantage. I mean, I want to hear, there's not a right or wrong answer here. In fact, in the wild, in research, people use both. But I want you to face a decision that could be a research decision. You need to plot something to talk about it. What are you going to do, negativity or concurrence? And why? Anybody? Yeah.
seems like they're the same, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe negativity might be a bit easier to compute because it's...
Oh, for easiness, like, assume that they're equally easy. But you wouldn't mind either, no? You don't see anything that breaks the symmetry? Well, that's good. It's a good opinion. It's actually a very reasonable opinion. It doesn't matter which one. Any other opinions? Yep.
Can you get bounded entanglement in
your experiment? Remember, not in 2x2 or 3x2. It's bound. It's not bounded. It's a different thing. Bound entanglement. Okay, I'll give you three options. How many people would choose concurrence? Okay, let me begin with the one that's probably most popular. How many people would say there's no difference, really? Hands up. How many people would use concurrence? How many people would use negativity? Okay, why negativity then?
Because I can easily diagonalize and compute the values and solve the problem.
I see. Well, I mean, the other one is matrix products and diagonalization too.
But it looks ugly.
But yeah, assuming that it's equally difficult, so that is removed. It's not a bad answer to say that either of them, and actually it's like a very good answer. I would compute negativity. And my reason is that, as I said, maybe I do it with qubits, but what happens if I do it with some other systems? What happens if I do it with harmonic oscillators now? I replace my qubits by two harmonic oscillators. Then, and I want to compare which one is better at extracting entanglement. Well, you need to compare, right? And if you compute concurrence in one of them, you cannot compute it for the harmonic oscillator. It's tough. So negativity is equally easy no matter what system you pick. Make sense, everybody? That would be my argument. But I agree with you. Therefore, two qubits is the same, right? So it doesn't matter which one you use. Any more questions? All right. Now, to give you a preview of the two other things in this topic that we're going to see before we move. Before we move to a protocol, to see the first protocol in quantum information, if you want, we're going to take a look at this, two things. Mutual information. Now, mutual information you've already faced, no, in your tutorial. But we'll see a little bit more about it, what it is, mutual information. Mutual information measures total correlations between two systems. But we're going to see something interesting about mutual information. I'm going to say the notion of quantum discord. How many people here have heard about quantum discord? Okay. So quantum discord, for those of you who haven't, which is the majority, it's an interesting thing. It's possibly a different kind of correlations that quantum states can have that are not classical, possibly, and they're also not entanglement. And it's related with the fact that it will give us a good inspiration for the Messmann problem. But it's related with the fact that mutual information can be understood in two different ways. Mutual information, classically, you have a random variable. Mutual information can be understood in two ways. In a way, I mean, again, just talking with words, although we will see it rigorously, of course. Mutual information is related with the amount of ignorance about a random, in mind, you have two random variables, A and B. So mutual information tells you how many bits of ignorance you remove from random variable A when somebody reveals a bit of information about B. You see how that measures correlations, right? So somebody tells you something about B and suddenly you have less ignorance in A. That is not a quantum thing. That is a characteristic of correlations. Make sense? Now, mutual information can be written in two ways, classically. one very operational, as I said, right? I make a measurement or an experiment on B that reveals one bit of information, right? And then the entropy condition, the entropy on A condition to having gotten that experiment on B is related, you know, is decreasing, if you want. It's non-zero. It takes some ignorance out of the system. Also, the mutual information can be related with the difference between the ignorance that you have when you know both, when you have the joint distribution, and the ignorance that you have when you have only the individual ones. Make sense? These two ways of understanding mutual information, how do we make them quantum? One of them is easy, because ignorance, you know, we just upgrade or upgrade. Choose the Shannon entropy to be the von Neumann entropy, and then you have the quantum version, no problem. But what about the one where you measure B? So what does it mean to know a bit of information about B and give it to A? It's not easy. And it's not easy precisely because how do we quantify the effect of knowing something about B, making a measurement on B? In quantum mechanics, making a measurement requires something that is called state update. See what I mean? When you make a measurement, you need to update the state. And we will talk about that because that's big. That's the measurement problem. And the measurement problem is very big in quantum info. It's extremely big in foundations, but it's also big in quantum info. What does it mean to make a measurement on B? And because when we try to implement what it means to make a measurement on B, we found that the two equivalent definitions for random variables of mutual information, one based on ignorance alone and the other one based on I revealed something here and now I know it, right? They don't coincide. You cannot make them coincide in quantum theory. So the difference between the two is what we will call quantum discord. Something funny that classically is equivalent and makes total sense, and you will see it's very logical to define. But when you try to do the quantum version, there's no way to make them coincide. There's no way to do the second definition quantumly. Any attempts or our best attempts, right, cannot really reproduce the ignorance-based notion of quantum information, mutual information. And that is the birth of the notion of quantum discord. And we will discuss what it is and maybe try to guess where it's coming from or what it is, because it's going to be, I think, pretty fun. After that, we will see quantum teleportation. Okay. And after that, we will see, we will delve more into the measurement problem. Any more questions or anything? Hopefully it's exciting material, I don't know. How much are you, I mean, I will ask Vindija, because I think you had a anonymous poll, and I found out, but are you having relative fun with the course? Well, you're still here, so that tells me something. But I hope that is fun. I mean, these things are very fun, and they become more fun as we go, I think so. I don't know. Also, come talk to me after class if you have questions or discussions. I'm very happy to have discussions with you. It happened every year. I had a lot of discussions with the students, right? So all these things have a long, all the things that I'm teaching you have a long reach in not just in quantum information per se, but in foundations and things that you, how many of you are taking any like optional courses on things related to quantum fields? How many? A number, right? So these things are important to understand the things that people do, mixing quantum information and relativistic systems or relativity and gravity and things like that, right? So please do ask questions. All these things are connected all the time. Anyway, I'll see you Wednesday.